Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? Oh my gosh, we're back for episode 4. It's so great to see you again.
It's great to be seen. And I don't know if you notice anything different about me, how I look, how I sound, how I'm acting.
You look a decade older. Is that what happened?
Decade. I think you meant a day.
Yeah, you have turned the big 4-0, yeah?
Dun, dun, dun. But, you know, you're only like, what, 7 days behind me? No, 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I noticed something about this. You were born on America's Independence Day, and yes. I was born on the French Independence Day.
Oh, Bastille oui, oui, oui.
But of course.
Oh. But of course. So my favorite thing about being 40 is proving my kids that 40 is not a huge number and they don't get to call me granny now, which is like their favorite thing to do. So I'm doing all the things that defy grannyhood, such as flossing, not the tooth kind, but the dance kind.
Right.
Push-ups, lots of them. And I'm going to shave my head and get lots of piercings. Sorry, not sorry, Mom.
What about tattoos, right? Get a lot of tattoos.
You know, hair grows back and you could take piercings out. Just so noncommittal about the tattoo thing. Cool, but I just can't do it.
I get that. You know, I have enjoyed over this period of time when I've been telling people that I'm turning 40. They've been so gracious. Wow, you don't look 40. And I'm like, I don't know what 40 is supposed to look like.
Right.
But in all honesty, everything here is absolutely fake. Right? So... My hair color comes from a bottle. Like, my hair is completely gray. If you actually saw what I look like IRL, you would see that I am, in fact,
it's terrifying.
More than 40 looking.
You're like cheese, though. You age well. Fromage. I mean, fromage.
Fromage, uh-huh. But, I don't know. Cheese also gets smellier as it ages, too. So
true. Which too. We know from your gear bag, since you're a triathlete. It's true about you as well.
It's true. Yeah. I came home from a run the other day and I tried to give my daughter a hug and she said, Daddy, no, you smell.
Oh, brutal honesty.
I love kids for that. Kids are just wonderful for that. That's what keeps me young.
Well, you know what keeps me young is hanging out with really cool people like our guest on the pod today.
Yeah, nerding out definitely keeps you young. So who is our guest today?
Well, I am pumped to welcome my good friend, Dr. Anjali Bagra from Mayo Clinic. She wears like 1,000 hats there and about 2,000 outside of it. But her most prominent hats, you know, the ones that she would wear to Derby Day if she were a fan, is that she's the director of the Enterprise Automation Hub, and she's the medical director of the Office of Equity, Inclusion, and Diversity. So pretty big dealio. You, as our listeners, will see she's just a brilliant conversationalist, and we had a blast talking with her.
Such a great conversation. So interesting. Can't wait to share that with our listeners. But you know what? Before we get into it, let's have some actual real fun here before we get to the learning part of this podcast. We're going to play a new game, right?
We love games. What
are the rules of this game?
So this game's called Tech Trivia, and I'm a big trivia fan. I like to go to our local brewery and do trivia nights and like yell at the judge, but it's not going to end up like this, okay? There's no beer involved, and I'm not going to yell at you, but I am definitely going to win.
So, I don't know, every game that we've played on this podcast has been up for protest.
You're right. Yeah, we don't get along well. We're very competitive. We're sore losers, but there's no bloodshed. So that's good.
That's because you're in Minnesota and I'm on the East Coast.
Yeah, that's a good point. We probably should never do this live. Penny hoodles. We're going to take turns quizzing each other on health tech trivia. This is kind of a tip of the hat to our Back to the Future episode from season one, featuring the one and only golden halter top wearing Dr. Joel Gordon, where we talked about inflection points in technology history over time since the beginning of time. So we're going to do a fun little game to tip our hats back to that episode, specifically because Anjali talked a lot about this in her interview. And so it's really relevant to today's conversation as well. So the winner gets what, Elliot?
So the loser will treat the winner to a fresh pot of coffee in real life. So the next time we do get to see each other in the same state.
Not just a single serving. It's got to be a whole pot.
Yeah, a whole pot. It's a whole pot of coffee.
Hot pot of coffee.
And it, you know what? I feel like it needs to be extra pretentious. It needs to be like, it needs to be like French press.
Drip through the hairs of a unicorn.
So whenever it is that we get together, IRL, the loser, you, will treat the winner, me, to a pretentious pot of coffee, whatever that may be.
That's pretty presumptuous for an L7 weenie. All right, let's kick this off, right? First question of tech trivia begins with me, okay? Operation Cyborg, which groundbreaking surgical robot first used in 1985, only 1 year after our birthday, helped usher in the era of robotic-assisted surgery? Is it A, Da Vinci, B, Puma 560, C, R2-D2, or D, Cyberknife?
So I am very much a Star Wars fan. So I knew that it's not R2-D2. Mona Lisa, that makes me smile. We're going to go with Da Vinci.
Swing and a miss! But I would have guessed that too, to be fair. Cyberknife is such a cool name, but that's a fake product. The Puma 560, or Programmable Universal Machine for Assembly, was first used in 1985 to perform a stereotaxic operation, a minimally invasive surgery involving the brain. This pioneering procedure laid the groundwork for the development of more advanced surgical robots like the Da Vinci system, revolutionizing precision in surgical practices and reducing recovery times for patients. Interestingly enough, the Puma 560 was initially designed for industrial purposes before being adapted for medical use, showcasing the versatility of robotics technology. Boom!
Under protest from the jump. You can't throw something like Puma 560 in there and then with another robotic surgery product, you know, like Da Vinci.
Take it up with OpenAI, all right? I didn't write these.
I'm telling you, man, this is already under protest because I'm looking at my first question and my first question. Anyway, which innovation first widely used in the 1990s allows doctors to see and treat patients remotely via video calls?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not even giving you a multiple choice.
Okay, it's telemedicine. It's so easy. Read me the fun fact.
Telemedicine saw significant growth in the 1990s with advancements in telecommunications technologies, allowing doctors to see and treat patients remotely via video calls. This innovation has expanded access to healthcare services, especially in rural and underserved areas, by overcoming geographical barriers. Telemedicine has become increasingly popular, especially since the COVID-19 pandemic, providing a safe and convenient way for patients to receive medical care.
All right, you're right. That was unfair, but we'll see what the other options are, okay, before you protest and walk out on this pod. All right, here's your number two, Elliot. Yeah, I know. You're such a child. Health Data Highway, the first computer-based medical information system, which paved the way for today's electronic health records, was implemented in the 1960s at which university? Harvard, University of California, San Francisco, Stanford, or Mayo Clinic?
That's some BS, man. We're going to go with University of California.
Well, I would have guessed that too, but it was Stanford. Stanford's pioneering work on the SUMEX AIM project, which stands for Stanford University Medical Equipment Computer for Artificial Intelligence in Medicine, in the 1960s was foundational to the development of electronic health records. This system allowed for the storage and retrieval of vast amounts of patient data, significantly improving medical research and patient care efficiency. This project also fostered collaboration between computer scientists and medical professionals, leading to advancements in AI applications in healthcare. That's cool. All right, give me a tough one, buddy. I feel bad for you.
I only have the options that are in front of me. All right. In what year did the first robotic-assisted heart surgery take place, making headlines in the medical world?
Ooh, this happened at Mayo Clinic.
A, 1985. B, 1994. C, 2001. Or D, 2008.
Okay, I stand corrected. I don't think it happened at Mayo Clinic. It was the first heart lung bypass that happened in like the 50s. Okay, give me my years again. I'm sorry.
1985.
1994.
2001. Or 2008.
Okay, I'm going to guess the 1990s one because that's like close enough after this Operation Cyborg Puma 560 thing came to market in healthcare.
It was 2001. The first robotic-assisted heart surgery took place in 2001, marking a significant milestone in the medical world. The surgery was performed using the Da Vinci surgical system.
Ah, yes.
Which allowed for precise and minimally invasive procedures. The success of this operation demonstrated the potential of robotic technology in enhancing surgical outcomes and reducing recovery times for patients, paving the way for more widespread adoption of robotic surgery in various medical fields.
Contrary to popular opinion, I do not know everything. All right, Elliot.
We're at 1-0.
1-1. Oh, no, you haven't gotten any yet. That's right. 1-0.
Oh, yes. Please say that again. Okay.
Paging Dr. Digital, the first use of telemedicine can be traced back to which decade? Hey, you can do this. Where patients could consult doctors over telephone lines. The 20s, 40s, the 60s, or the 80s. Mr. Elliot, second T is for telehealth. Which decade? Telephone lines.
40s. I don't know when was the telephone widely used?
Telemedicine at the same time? Think about the adoption lag.
All right. Well, so my original thought was going to be the 60s.
That's it. You want a half point?
Sure.
Okay. I'll throw you a pity point there. All right. Telemedicine began in the 1960s with NASA's space missions. So cool. Where astronauts needed to be monitored from Earth, capital E. Additionally, the Nebraska Psychiatric Institute used closed circuit television to provide healthcare services between the Institute and Norfolk State Hospital, showcasing early telemedicine's potential bridge to geographical barriers. Still haven't figured that one out. This innovative use of technology paved the way for modern telemedicine, allowing patients in remote areas sometimes to access healthcare services without the need for travel.
I'm going to go ahead and say that lots of doctors would make the case that, hey, I've been doing telemedicine since the invention of the telephone and would classify patients calling up their office or calling them up in the 1940s, claiming that would be considered telemedicine. So I'm going to take that. I'm not even going to take that half a point as a pity point. I'm going to take that half a point with pride.
Because the telephone was invented in 1876. So, yeah.
All right. AI for the win.
Okay.
In 2016, which AI program developed by DeepMind famously defeated a world champion Go player and later applied its algorithms to healthcare? Is it AlphaGo, Watson, Siri, or Cortana?
Can't ever get the Siri commercial out of my head, the one where it like attacks people, but I think it's Watson.
And like nobody actually ever used Cortana, so
yeah, so like uncool.
Yeah, but you're wrong. The answer is AlphaGo, developed by DeepMind, made headlines in 2016 by defeating world champion Go player Lee Sedol. showcasing the advanced capabilities of AI in strategic thinking and decision making. Following its success in gaming, DeepMind applied AlphaGo's algorithms to healthcare, particularly in medical imaging and diagnostics. The AI's ability to analyze complex patterns in large data sets has significantly improved the accuracy and efficiency of diagnosing diseases, such as detecting eye conditions from retinal scans. All right, so the score, I believe, is 1 to 1.5.
Like we're like a lot dumber than we make ourselves out to be on the air. Absolutely fabulous. In 2017, which country became the first to approve a digital therapeutic app as a prescription treatment? The United States, Germany, United Kingdom, or Japan? Man, this is like Jeopardy.
It feels like Germany. I'm going to say Germany.
You're right. Good job.
Yes!
How do you? Yes. Okay. Germany made headlines in 2017 by becoming the first country to approve a digital therapeutic app, Deprexis, for treating depression. This innovative step marked a significant milestone in integrating digital health solutions into mainstream healthcare, allowing for more accessible and scalable mental health treatments. Digital therapeutics offered personalized, evidence-based interventions that can be accessed via smartphones, providing support for patients who may not have easy access to traditional therapy.
Awesome.
All right.
That's awesome.
You are now in the lead, my friend.
Scan you later. The invention of which imaging technology in the 1970s allowed for non-invasive, detailed internal scans of the human body? Was it MRI, ultrasound, X-ray, or PET scans?
Okay, what was the year again?
1970s.
Ooh.
A whole decade. A whole decade that, which I will remind our listeners, we were not here for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a toughie.
We're young.
We are, darn it. We're only 40. Well, you're still 39.
That's right.
The recording of this podcast. You're in your 30s. Damn it. Such a jerk. MRI.
Correct. Magnetic resonance imaging was invented in the 70s and revolutionized medical imaging by providing non-invasive, detailed internal scans of the human body. Unlike X-rays, MRI uses magnetic fields and radio waves to create detailed images of organs and tissues, allowing for early detection and diagnosis of various conditions. The development of MRI technology has significantly improved the accuracy of medical diagnoses and has become an essential tool in modern medicine. All right, we're down to our last question. What is the score?
It's 2 to 1.5. Is that right? I can't freaking remember.
Right.
Okay.
That's
yeah. Okay. Right. All right. Code Blue. Which programming language introduced in the 1950s was critical for the development of early healthcare information systems? Okay, this is easy. No, actually, it's not.
It's got to be DOS or something. Go ahead. Keep going.
I don't even know if I'm saying these right correctly. COBOL. COBOL, Fortran, Basic, ALGOL, ALGOL. It's an acronym. I'll give you a hint.
It's not Basic?
It's not Basic. Man, this would be easy on you.
What are they again?
COBOL, Fortran, ALGOL, because you already eliminated Basic.
I got to go with COBOL.
You're right. Good job, buddy. All right. Yeah. You only have 1 in 3 chance of getting it right. Okay, COBOL stands for Common Business Oriented Language, which was developed in 1959 and became crucial for early healthcare information systems due to its ability to handle large volumes of data. And its use in automating administrative and clinical processes helped healthcare institutions improve efficiency and accuracy. COBOL's readability and ease of use made it ideal for business and medical applications, and it remains in use today for legacy systems in many industries, including healthcare. Ooh, we're a legacy industry. Damn right. We're not giving up our fax machines and our pagers. It's mine. You can't take it away from me.
Sorry. All right. Let's see here. Last question. You need to get this right for the win. If not, I win.
Okay, that's fine. I make a good cup of pretentious coffee. Pretentious brew.
Alrighty. Appy Health, which year saw the launch of the first mobile health app to manage chronic conditions, paving the way for digital health solutions?
Are you going to give me a list?
Yeah, sure. 2003, 2008, 2012, 2015.
I'm trying to think of when I had a flip phone. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So 3, 8, 12, and what?
15.
That's tough. I'm going to say 2012.
No.
Was it 2008?
2008.
Oh, wow. That was the year after I graduated college.
Right?
I had a razor. People had smartphones at that time.
My smart enough, I guess. Cheap. Smart enough. In 2008, the launch of the first mobile health app, WellDoc, to manage diabetes marked the beginning of digital health solutions for chronic conditions. This app provided patients with real-time feedback and personalized health management plans, significantly improving disease management and patient outcomes. The success of WellDoc paved the way for a multitude of digital health applications, transforming how patients engage with their health and healthcare providers. Wow. So the final score, 2.522. I think I want an Americano drip.
You don't get to pick the menu, okay? You're getting Folgers. A whole pie of it.
Wow. Yes, Folgers. Yes, the unequivocally pretentious coffee. That was so much fun. I always enjoy playing a good game with you. It even feels better when I win. So hopefully, listeners, you enjoyed playing along at home. Please let us know on LinkedIn how you did while you were listening. Did you get them all right? We want to know.
In the meantime, I'm going to go lick my wounds and brew a pot of Folgers to ship to you.
It'll end up cold brew.
Mm-hmm. It'll end up cold brew. So really pumped to welcome Anjali. She's been waiting outside of our offices for the last 25 minutes. She's probably left by now. But if she's still there, we can't wait to bring this interview to you.
Stick around, everybody. We'll be right back.
I'm on fire tonight. Okay, stop.
Are you part of the 45% of physicians over the age of 55? Have you ever felt like you're trying to decode hieroglyphics when talking to your Gen Z patients? Have you ever had a young patient walk in and say, "Doc, I've been feeling totally sus lately. Like, my vibe check is failing big time. I thought it was just some cap, but now I'm finna get worried. My sleep's all choogy and my energy's no longer bussin'. I'm ghosting my daily grind and it's straight up L after L." And you're left there thinking, what did they just say? Introducing ZBridge Medical, the ultimate AI-powered translator bridging the gap between seasoned doctors and their Gen Z patients. ZBridge Medical offers real-time translation, turning medical jargon into relatable Gen Z slang, and vice versa. No more getting lost in translation. It's all vibes and clear convos. It's like having a universal remote for language, one even you could program. ZBridge Medical also boasts contextual understanding. This feature is low-key genius, grasping the context and all the cultural tea so convos feel natural AF. Whether it's decoding TikTok trends or subtle shade, ZBridge nails it, ensuring docs and patients are always in sync. Imagine explaining treatment options for ulcerative colitis or irritable bowel syndrome. Without ZBridge Medical, it's a challenge. But with it, easy peasy. You could say, for treating your ulcerative colitis, we have several options, including anti-inflammatory drugs, immune system suppressors, and biologics. We might also consider dietary changes or surgery in severe cases. But we all know that won't translate. With ZBridge Medical, you'll sound knowledgeable and relatable. So basically, we've got meds to chill the inflammation, some high-key powerful immune blockers, and next-gen stuff called biologics. We might tweak your eats, or in a big yikes scenario, think about surgery, bet? For listeners of Tech It to the Limit, you'll get an exclusive 10% off your first ZBridge Medical subscription. Just use the promo code TECHIT10 at checkout. ZBridge Medical is not responsible for finding yourself excessively using the term fam, unexpectedly knowing the latest TikTok trends and having an uncanny ability to understand if you know references. ZBridge may not be held liable for a patient's thinking you're high-key cool for your sudden urge to use phrases like big yikes. Also, be prepared for the occasional YOLO moment and a sudden inexplicable need to start every sentence with no cap. Oh, and you might feel like you have a main character energy, which is totally snatched. If you ever feel like a treatment plan slaps or you think it's sus, ZBridge Medical will be your go-to translator. So take several seats and let ZBridge make your consultations lit. ZBridge Medical, bridging the generational gap, one conversation at a time, no cap.
Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to meet the Swiss Army knife of healthcare leadership, Dr. Anjali Bagra. She's here to cut through complexity and open up a world of equitable, inclusive, and human-centered innovation in medicine. Like your granddad's multi-tool, Dr. Bagra is the go-to for nearly any challenge confronting healthcare executives today. Don't brave the wilderness without her. She's a professor of medicine, medical director of Enterprise Automation Hub, medical director of the Office of Equity, Inclusion, and Diversity at Mayo Clinic. Need a wrench for education? She's got it covered, as she has served as the education chair for integrative medicine. Want to tighten up on faculty development? She's the vice chair in the Division of General Internal Medicine. This well-oiled dynamo is the sought-after thought leader on healthcare transformation, the automation ecosystem, resilience, leadership, and healthcare equity. But wait, there's more. When she's not caring for patients or advocating for human-centered digital transformation, Dr. Bagra saws through regulatory tape as a board member of the Society for Ultrasound and Medical Education and as a member of the HIMSS Global Health Equity Network Task Force, the Medical Industry Leadership Institute, and the MMA Health Equity Community Practice Group. Plus, Dr. Bagra pries open doors for female medical students as the director and board member of the National Ignite Med program. Move over, Jesse Ehrenfeld. Here comes a Renaissance woman. The versatile Dr. Bagra has won the prestigious Kasari Woman of the Year Award in India for her equity and social advocacy work. And she's the co-founder and co-director of Mayo Clinic's Grit in Medicine and Rise for Equity conferences. These events are designed to sharpen your skills and give you the tools to promote innovation and inclusivity in healthcare. If you want to stay on the cutting edge of inspiration and insight, tune into her Grit in Medicine and Rise for Equity podcasts wherever you pod. Welcome, Anjali. May I call you Anjali?
Absolutely.
Whew, I need to grab a sip of water after that intro.
Oh my God.
That was honestly the best one we've ever had in terms of a resume.
I mean, that's really impressive. Thank you so much for being here. I'm surprised that you were able to carve out a single moment for us, given
Nailed it.
Trust me, I've worked on time management, building resiliency, being a mindful human being. No, this is truly a highlight. It's a pleasure. It's Wonderful. An honor to hang out with you too.
Anjali, we are so grateful to have you here. We like to start off with our guests. We're really big fans of puns, if you couldn't tell by our intro. We like to ask all of our guests, be they dads or be they not, what is your favorite dad joke? Can you share one with us?
Yeah, so I joked with Sarah a little bit around this. I would say this was the most difficult thing for me to prepare for this podcast, because it is tremendous pressure to live up to your wit and humor. But I do have a dad joke in keeping with our theme of discussion today. So if you both are ready.
Oh. Hit us.
Why don't AI researchers like nature?
I don't know
the answer, so I'm not going to say.
I don't know.
It has too many bugs.
I love it.
Yeah.
No, that's delightful.
That was amazing, Anjali. So on point for today. You're right. And it's a summary joke, you know? I mean, if you live in the Northern Hemisphere.
Totally.
Yes.
In my backyard, trust me, this is so true in my backyard right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cicadas are coming. I love it.
Well, I'm not so worried about them because they live for like 24 hours or something like that. It's the tiny little invisible ones that bite you that I'm worried about. But I digress. So our first serious question to tap into your expertise, Anjali, your career trajectory, as evidenced by your bio, has been remarkably diverse. From internal medicine and point of care ultrasound to becoming a resiliency expert, as you mentioned, you chair the EID office at Mayo Clinic, and now you're leading the automation core. Can you share what initially sparked your interest in intelligent human-centered automation and how your varied experiences have shaped your approach to this field?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Sarah. You know, I've often thought about my somewhat multidimensional and what I like to call fateful path from a variety of different training backgrounds, including radiology globally, to internal medicine, to mindfulness and EID or DEI. You know, I truly think that they have all, in a nutshell, and, you know, really shaped my vision for human-centered automation now. And I think at the core, this is all about leveraging technology to enhance our abilities to reduce burnout with reduction of admin burden when it comes to healthcare providers, and really to ensure that every patient receives the most compassionate and empathetic care with a very strong lens on equitable care, because that's what we all aspire for. Plus, I would say it's kind of nice to have a few robots by your side, isn't it? But as long as they remember who's the boss. But jokes aside, you know, I would say my interest in intelligent automation, and like I said, I kind of trace my path to what I'm doing today. It really started in the most unexpected place at a time where I didn't even realize that intelligent automation would be a thing one day. So the radiology reading room during my first training program, imagine staring at thousands of images every single day. And you're doing this to catch every tiny detail in those images. It's almost like playing a high stakes game of Where's Waldo with people's health on the line. And this is a time where there was absolutely no automation available to sophisticate your ability to make diagnoses on thousands of images with very low resolution imaging technologies in place. So imagine the power of intelligent automation at that time, helping us really find Waldo faster without significant eye strain, which I think is very important to me right now. But I'd say then fast forward within my medical practice of internal medicine and use of point of care ultrasound at the bedside, here you're jack of all trades, right? You have your machine at the bedside, but you could be diagnosing anything from a gouty arthritis in the ankle to a very severe heart condition. And what it really requires for you to be able to do it well, you ought to be very skilled to obtain an image, to interpret the image, and then come up with a diagnosis at the bedside with the necessary treatment. So there's a lot of triaging, streamlining diagnostics, and really coming up with treatment. And many a times I've seen this firsthand that there is a strong learning curve, you know, getting that image and really interpreting it. Imagine all of that being potentially automated to be able to take care of our patients. And then finally, I would say as a resiliency expert and using my lens of mindfulness, you know, I've worked very closely with human burnout in healthcare. And I would say for the longest time, our emphasis was on determining root cause. Like a lot of research was into what drives burnout in healthcare. Mm-hmm. Well, we knew that we needed to address the system, but we needed magic. We needed magic to have scalable interventions within the system, because there's only so much humans can do. So another great application of intelligent automation. And finally, I would say over the past several years, leading within the DEI or EID landscape has been the most humbling experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we can do one thing with intentionality, that is inclusion of the human touch when we design these technologies, so that it's never lost on us that, you know, we are present when we make these, we are mindful when we make these, and we are really doing this with an eye to solving and making this a better human experience for our patients as well as us as healthcare providers. So long way to summarize how I really think, you know, each experience has led to a different dimension of building for intelligent automation.
Yeah. Wow. I just love that arc that you just took us along, Anjali. What an incredible career. And you and I have talked a little bit in the past in other conversations about T-shaped individuals, right? Where you have that breadth, yes, and that depth of knowledge. And you are absolutely one of those T-shaped individuals. And I must say, Where's Waldo is one of my absolute favorite childhood books. And I have all of them on my kids' shelf. My son picks one up every morning when he's just sort of waking up and he's not ready to engage with the world yet. And he just looks for Waldo. So thank you for that lovely snippet.
Oh, that's
Elliot, do
very.
you want to say your hashtag? Because I thought of it like 20
Yeah, I
times.
know. I kept thinking it over and over again. My hashtag is machines make care more human. And I think a lot of what you were saying speaks so much to that. Let's put aside the fact that Where's Waldo is very on brand for the elder millennial vibe that we bring to this podcast. I want to just ask a quick little follow-up question, if I could, about some of the things that you were talking about there, because I want to make it real for our listeners around what do we mean when we say the human touch in design? Can you give me an example? I know this might be off the top of your head or off the cuff, but can you give me an example that makes that feel real for us?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Elliot. And I'm going to try to do justice to this. The way I look at human touch in design is really breaking it down to getting in the shoes of the customer. Okay, I'm using a business term here, but I think that's at the essence. You know, we don't want to design something because we can, but we want to design for the person we are trying to serve. Or, you know, the group that we are standing up for. So the human-centered design principle is really understanding the problem that is being solved versus creating, you know, like a very shiny gadget and creating a marketplace of, you know, shiny widgets out there. So, you know, the focus here is solving a problem, doing it in a way that is truly serving the person at the core of the solution that we are creating. In other words, I would say a human-centered design is solutioning for the people, by the people, versus to the people.
How very democratic. I'm reminded of a phrase that I hear a lot in product development, and I like to use it as well. Nothing about us without us.
Without us. Absolutely.
And that's
It
that was
does have
kind
a
of
political ring to it. I'm with you.
Well, thank you for that, for bringing that home for us. So, given your vast, broad, T-shaped experiences, broad and deep experience, really wondering from your vantage point as an expertise, what future trends or innovations in intelligent automation are driving your excitement? What do you get jazzed about when you wake up in the morning, and how do you see that transforming the healthcare landscape, like say over the next decade?
Yeah. So I get jazzed about a lot of different things within intelligent automation, and these could be simple to very complex. I'm going to start with simple things because one of the things I've discovered, and I guess a lot of our listeners are probably experts at intelligent automation, but it's been surprising how this whole idea of what intelligent automation truly is can be quite confusing to people. So, something as simple as defining intelligent automation, trust me, can be very exciting to me on certain days. So, I do want to begin with that. At its core, automation is application of process or technology, including a wide range of technologies, such as software upgrades to robotic process automation, to artificial intelligence, to use of robotics, really to achieve any positive outcome that we are driving towards, with the intention of having appropriately reduced and appropriately minimal human input. And it's a very simple concept, and it could include things like process mining and simplifying a process, leaning out processes, to really, like I said, using very complex technology at the other end. All of that really falls within the umbrella of intelligent automation. What I see most exciting on the complex end of the spectrum is some broad trends. First of all, I would say, broadly speaking, this shift from reactive to proactive problem solving. That's a big shift with intelligent automation and AI capabilities. And really, that's what allows us to build more core capacity and finally enhance productivity of humans. Because if we really look back and see, you know, what are those watershed moments in history where human productivity really got significantly enhanced? I think we can agree it was the dot-com bubble where we could have access to information that really enhanced our cognitive productivity, our ability to complete tasks in much lesser time because we had rapid access to information. And I think the second peak now, in many ways, like the fourth industrial revolution, is now, where we can leverage and capitalize on these tools to enhance productivity. So one example, you know, we've had statistics for a long time, but imagine layering that with significantly more artificial intelligence-driven insights with predictive analytics and technologies such as digital twins. Now, digital twins can be at an individual level when we want to study disease, or it could be at a systems level when we study an entire map of organizations, and we layer an automated organization over a non-automated one to really see the productivity gains. But it can also, digital twins of businesses or organizations can also help us proactively mitigate bottlenecks. And we don't have to waste that much time then to really reach a desired state. So it really is a complete shift within healthcare from driving outcomes for a single patient to a group of patients to the entire healthcare system. And I think it's pretty remarkable. I think it's very exciting. You know, we have the ability to do it now, as long as we can rally the teams around it. Another one that I mentioned briefly is integration of robotics and healthcare. Besides them being cool, you know, it really allows us to bring in robots and digital spaces as a care member of the team, you know, engaging in care elements that we can't with humans by the bedside. Finally, I would say one trend that's perhaps not talked about more explicitly is democratization of access. I think in today's day and age, this technology is available to everybody who's interested in exploring it. That's pretty powerful. And I think there's finally a leveling of mismatch of power in some ways between patients and providers. This is available to our patients. This is available to healthcare providers. It really levels the playing field if we think about it. And that is a very exciting trend and something that we've ought to figure out to reap maximal benefits from.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
So much. It's like a
note on the side.
It's like three cartloads of luggage to unpack there.
I feel like I should have paid a cover to be able to attend this conversation. I think we'll start with what most recent comments and walk our way back. But I love the comment you just made about democratization of access to technology, right? Mm-hmm. And to these tools that can amplify knowledge so rapidly. And you made such an interesting point about essentially we're leveling the playing field between patients and providers, and we're reducing that information asymmetry that mm-hmm. really drives a lot of mm-hmm. overutilization of healthcare services at times. So it would be interesting to examine the impact of intelligent automation on total cost of care. And I'm sure somebody's probably already doing that. And if not, let's get on it, okay? And I did have one other comment I wanted to make before I pass the baton to Elliot. I really appreciate earlier on that you said you got mm-hmm. jazzed about a lot of things. And one of the first things you talked about was process improvement before adding mm-hmm. technology. And I cannot stress that enough for our listeners. If you work in the tech field, you need to be well versed in process mapping and time-driven activity-based costing and all of those methodologies where you can lean out a process and identify the opportunities to take away work before you automate it. Otherwise, you're just automating the cost that's already in the system.
Boy, what a great point. Absolutely.
And I know we're going to discuss this in hopefully a little more depth when we talk about the risks and how to mitigate. But Sarah, you're spot on. The last thing we want to do is automate bad process.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Because then we're totally going 180 degrees from the goal that we are trying to drive.
Right. I know Elliot had a really wonderful follow-up question he wanted to ask you too.
So you were talking about this being an inflection point in history. We actually talked about this in a previous episode from last season called Back to the Future, where we went through major digital transformation inflection points throughout history.
around that .com bubble and the availability of digital data, right? That was one of those that we kind of mentioned on that show as well. I'm curious, you said that we're at an inflection point today in history, and I'm wondering, what's driving that inflection point? Is it the fact that now we have the computing power to manage that data in a way that we haven't before? What's driving that inflection point?
Yeah, you know, Elliot, this is such a great question because, you know, I've thought about this. I don't think there is a single determinant, you know, like a strong determinant, certainly in terms of technical capabilities, computing powers, technology getting advanced, you know, all of those are necessary ingredients, but they are not sufficient, you know, for this inflection point to really be a true inflection. I think what's layered along with that and brings complementarity is the human will, is how we've blurred the boundaries and how we are embracing partnership. So if you look at healthcare transformation, I think we can all agree that today more than ever, we see partnerships across industry from healthcare, tech giants, you know, consulting people, for-profit sector, public, nonprofit, like everybody wants to be, you know, wants to work collaboratively. I think there is definitely a cultural shift. Also, I think contributing significantly to progress and acceleration is how we blurred the boundaries just geographically. Globally, we are more connected as a world. You know, it takes us very little time to glean insight from, you know, a completely different part of the world. The COVID pandemic really also brought humanity together in weird ways. You know, it accelerated adoption. It accelerated us solutioning. It brought us closer to our future by almost 10 years. Things we were hoping to deliver 10 years later, we were able to do in 2 months because we broke down regulation. We broke down all the prohibitive systems around us. We were willing to be creative. We broadened our scopes. We came together. So
we flooded the market with venture capital dollars.
You know, I mean, like there is this tremendous human will to make this a better experience within healthcare. But in general, you know, I think we came very close to the fact that we are all transient. We came so close to our transience that it became way too real, right? Like we can all be here sitting today and not there tomorrow. And it's so uncanny. We kind of almost like had to become comfortable with that. So I think it's complex, it's multidimensional. It's just humanity coming together and agreeing to get comfortable with the uncomfortable things and really become bolder and do it collectively, making each other stronger versus really looking at each other as like traditional competitors in this space. It was more of a collaborative mindset versus a competitive mindset that really allowed for the progress that we've made.
I love that perspective, Anjali. This is why I love talking to you, because you always turn a traditional kind of discussion on its head and help me see the problem in a totally different light. So here I am typing notes onto the side to Elliot. This is all about money and like there's market opportunities. So no wonder there's collaboration going on. And then you say this deep, deep thing, right? Which is, Elliot, I'm going to let you translate it into funny words because I won't do it justice.
Because that's all I'm here for. I'm just here.
Like we know we're thinking the same thought, right? And you are going to say that you're going to land this. So go for it.
Oh God, right now.
We stare. Come on. I want you to tell me about the void.
Be funny right now.
Dance.
No, what you were talking, I was like, you know, you were talking about, you know, staring our transience in the face, right? So we all had this collective moment where we were staring into the void in a way that we've never been confronted before collectively as a species. And we heard ourselves screaming back and decided to take action on it. I mean, that's not funny, but.
All right, well, let's move on to a new question. That was excellent. Anjali, how do we ensure that the implementation of automation in our industry doesn't compromise the human touch that's essential to patient care? So you've talked a little bit about this previously human-centered design, human-centered automation. How do we actually do that? How do we make it happen?
It's easier to intellectualize, right? Like, it's easier to talk about a utopian view of intelligent automation, and then you start building and you realize, gosh, I gotta walk the talk. And, you know, sometimes that can be a hard thing to do because you're so eager to drive an outcome. So at the core, the way I look at automation and our team looks at automation is really to use it as a tool to decrease the friction between many parts of the healthcare engine. You know, we really want to use automation to solve problems versus, you know, get very much in love with the technology, so much so that we lose sight of why we are doing it in the first place, and then remaining very fiercely committed to the fact that this needs to be a human-centered thing. You know, I would say I also want to lead off with automation paradox. And what do I mean by that? I mean, you know, and I'll share examples of being a frontline physician, how I really think automation is really what allows humans to do what they do best, which is being human. I'm yet to meet somebody in healthcare who went into healthcare for the paperwork. And trust me, that's the number one driver, one of the top drivers of burnout.
I think those are called lawyers.
I did not go into healthcare thinking that I'm going to analyze more than 200 pages of records on every single patient I see in clinic. But some days that can be a ground reality, right? And think about this, with our traditional ways of caring and analyzing documents and leaning with data, we use less than 10% of data that we collect in healthcare, because we love collecting data in healthcare. For those of us who have checked in for appointments, you can be asked a question 10 different times with some nuance of that information.
That's Imagine never that happened it, to me before. That's
no, never happened.
Either. What are you talking about?
Right. So, you know, one of our commitments here in this space is to eliminate that dehumanizing aspect. And again, we had talked about how immense amount of attention goes into reading hundreds and thousands of films. The same thing applies to going through documentation. When you're analyzing just vast amounts of data, there is intense focus on attention to detail. Yet we know that, you know, as humans, we are prone to error. Well, so are machines, but probably lesser so, because they can be designed to drive a certain outcome. So I think fundamentally at its core, automation allows for eliminating those kind of complexities and layers of the to-do tasks in healthcare. And so guess what? I have more time to be human with my patients. I have more time to talk to my patients. I have more time to discuss their care with them. And I think another end of that and another example of that is documentation, which is, again, another big driver of burnout and also dehumanization of care. Because if I'm going to spend half hour documenting a very complex interaction with a patient, that half hour needs to come out of somewhere, right, in the day. And where is that coming out from? And if we eliminate all of these tasks in the background, guess what we enable our healthcare providers to do? Devote more time being human with the patient. So that's really what I mean by the automation paradox. I know there is a lot of fear around automation replacing humans, and, you know, and we're going to talk about how, yes, as a collective, we need to understand how we are going to upskill, reskill our workforce so that jobs aren't going away. But at its core, when done right, automation has a very strong potential to bring back humanity in the care that we provide to our patients. I think there's another consideration here, and that's the patient side. It is tremendously overwhelming for our patients to navigate the healthcare system to a point that they can't retain their humanity. And they can become very mechanical in their experience of navigating healthcare. So I think that is a very important component of human-centeredness when we enable these in the hands of our patients. I do think that involves a clear understanding of role of automation, as well as the integrity of the automations within healthcare, so we can build trust with our patients. And if there's transparency a clear understanding, I think we have, you know, we have an opportunity to reinforce and build on that trust with our patients, which sometimes can be a very hard thing to establish.
Well, and a very easy thing to break.
Very easy thing to break.
And as you were talking about the patient side of things, I've been a victim of it, and many, many other people have been a victim of it, wherein people have deployed automation and transformative technologies to make it easier for them to make money, but mm-hmm. dehumanizes me as a patient and doesn't take my circumstances into consideration when caring for me. Here's a perfect example. As a patient, I am asked automatically when mm-hmm. I go to have a telehealth appointment with my provider, goes through a series of SDOH data questions, right? Automatically gets prompted as part of my telehealth appointment. Are you able to afford your food? I'm probably destroying the questions for what they actually are, but you get the point I'm driving at.
Yeah.
The purpose of my telehealth visit is a med check, because the automated systems and rules that are built into the provider's application say it's been 6 months. This person right. has to have an appointment in order to be prescribed their routine maintenance meds that they've been on for mm-hmm. years, right? Mm-hmm. And now I'm on a high deductible plan because that's where the industry is going. And now mm-hmm. I'm on the hook to pay $100 fee for a physician visit to get a routine med refill for something I've been on. Now it's going to cost me $10 for the meds, but it's $100 for that visit. And mm-hmm. I'm automatically asked if I can afford my food.
Yeah.
Like yeah. how dehumanizing is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think you raised such a good point, Elliot. One of the things we have to understand is technology doesn't always have context. You know, that's one of the biggest pitfalls. That's one of the biggest risks. And that's where we as consumers of technology and enablers of technology need to step in at the right time and understand where it's appropriate to mitigate something that's automatically driven and where it's appropriate to enhance that so that, you know, we don't lose track of the outcome we are trying to drive, which is better experience for the patient, not the worst experience for the patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you hit it. You hit the nail on the head, Anjali, because I'm thinking about my experience as a patient educator before I worked mm-hmm. in healthcare technology. And so often when we design tech, what we forget about is the why. And ideally, we can design every end-to-end patient journey with a patient as our co-pilot, and they're calling the shots, and we're meeting their every need, anticipating every turn, right? But that's not really scalable from a design perspective. But what we can at least do is explain a little bit more transparently about the why. Yeah. Why, from a patient's perspective, are you being asked these questions today? And we don't have to go so far as to say we're required to ask them by the government, you know, but we can come up with some other human-centered response that also rings just as true as that regulatory burden that would make the patient have some more of that context around the technology that you're alluding to. Elliot, do you want to ask the next question? Because I am having too much fun, and this is gonna, you know, I'm.
Yeah, this has been such a fabulous conversation. I mean, we could continue to like go down lots of different rabbit holes here. So
for sure.
But I'm gonna find one for us to go down now. So you were talking about patient education, Sarah, just a moment mm-hmm. ago. And so I'm kind of curious about staff education, about provider education. So Anjali, as part of the work that you're doing, how can healthcare institutions best train and support their staff to adapt or to effectively use intelligent automation tools in their daily workflows? I'm thinking about change management specifically, mm-hmm. the work that needs to be done in change management in order to support adoption, to change hearts and minds, et cetera. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Elliot, I think this is one of the most important components of intelligent automation, AI, or any technology rollout, and that's, you know, education, adoption, and monitoring. And so without this, we are not going to drive the outcomes that we wish to. And we'll be, quite frankly, landing short of what we are able to. And I would say fundamentally, to your point earlier, the three ingredients that I see as completely necessary for this is continuous learning. And then the second one, which is very, very important, is supporting our staff, because change is hard. Change doesn't always come easily. And Sarah, you mentioned this earlier. There is a lot of information asymmetry. Sometimes change does not make sense to people, and we need to be able to support them through that learning as well. And then finally, I would say, despite how hard it may be, I think really inculcating a mindset of innovation is really, really important, so that this work doesn't become, what's a quick, easy solution in the moment, but it remains committed to innovation and transforming patient experience within healthcare. And so to be able to do that, it requires a few different approaches. One would be definitely comprehensive training programs. And within healthcare, I can say that a large part of our workforce is still, there is a lot of generational diversity. Let me rephrase. There is a lot of generational diversity in our workforce. And I think we owe it to our colleagues who didn't grow up learning about these technologies. We got to bring them up to speed. We got to give them a chance. And we have to build programs that cater to, across generations, so that everybody has a chance to be a part of this and really create the value proposition. And training programs are one place to start, but I think it's also equally important to create platforms where there can be more lighthearted exchange and ongoing sort of adult model of education with workshops and talk sessions. This podcast, this is a great example. And I think these learning platforms are very, very important. In addition, I would say making it real, user-friendly tools. Can we get this into the hands of our staff so that they can firsthand experience it? And this doesn't become like something invented in a design studio aimed at people, but something that people can experience during development, give their input. And that's fundamentally how our team rolls at Mayo. Most of the initiatives are driven by business owners. They bring their problems, they co-create, they co-develop, and we spread that learning across teams. And I think it's also very important then to transfer the learnings across the ecosystem. So in this case, I would say having a regular feedback mechanism to the developing team, but also to people who are at the front lines and operationalizing these, and having a seamless integration between the two is very, very important. We talked a little bit about this earlier, when we were talking about inflection point and how fundamentally, globally as an ecosystem, we are evolving and we are leaning more onto each other. I would say within healthcare, for all of this to work, one critical area of focus is rebuilding structure or re-architecting how healthcare works, because we cannot apply these technologies into archaic structures or archaic infrastructure, which is almost like an analogy that I find very interesting in this case is, if you can't bring a Ferrari if there are no roads, you're better off than with a bicycle, right?
I love it. It's a
And
great.
that is hard work, reimagining structure, rebuilding structure. Our organization is committed to that. Our leadership is committed to that. We are making significant investments in creating that structure, which will enable a seamless healthcare experience for our patients. And for that, a lot of us need to make some tough decisions. It needs boldness. It needs a multi-level commitment. And it really needs everybody being in to drive this forward.
Yeah, and I love that you talked about structures and infrastructures, because it requires a rethinking of the systems and the technologies, but also the physical infrastructure, right? As you know, that kind of support and the teams that
Totally.
support and utilize these technologies. That is probably the best analogy I've heard about AI or automation implementation since ChatGPT graced the universe with its presence, right? You can't bring a Ferrari if there are no roads. You're better off with a bicycle. Mic drop, Anjali. Very, very good.
Full disclosure, we are a Formula One family, and we do
Awesome.
have some favorites. So I'm not, and we're just gonna leave it at the Ferrari for now. But yeah, this is hard work. Building the roads is hard work.
Yeah, and it's not like you're building them on a sort of manifest destiny blank canvas, right? I mean, you're tearing down old roads and bridges, and there are people who are chaining themselves to those bridges and saying, you can't take this one down, right? It's essential. And so it just takes time and patience and persistence, right?
Those people use beepers.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, the and fax machines. Well, let's close it out with my personal favorite question. So, with so much hype surrounding AI and automation in healthcare, how do you and your team discern between genuinely transformative technologies and use cases for those technologies and those that are overhyped or maybe good but not great?
This is a great question, Sarah. We truly have a systematic approach to separate the hype from the truly transformative technologies. And I would say, there are three key ingredients here. Number one, which is a must for anyone working with these technologies, is skepticism. But we got to keep it healthy, not paralyzing. But that is absolutely essential. The second I would say is a critical lens to value and how value is being defined. And then finally, I would say for us, it's fierce commitment to our core mission and our guiding value, which is the needs of our patients come first. So from the get-go, our team employs a very meticulous approach to how we do this between genuinely transformative technologies versus hype. We essentially use a future back approach, or literally like scenario planning, when we come up with use case. So we start off with, what is the outcome we are trying to drive and what is the problem we are solving? And I think that keeps us grounded into not getting derailed by hype, but having laser focus on what outcome we are trying to drive. So I would say that's number one. And when we start vetting technologies, we really ask few questions. One of them being, does this truly bring benefit to our patients? And does it fit into three dimensions of, does it enhance access? Does it enhance experience? Does it improve outcomes? So I'm just kind of breaking it down of like how we do it systematically, on the patient front. The second one from a provider side or staff side is, does a certain technology or solution, does it reduce burden? Does it enhance the experience of healthcare providers within healthcare? And finally, does it solve for a big problem for our organization? Or does it bring quick wins in the moment? Like, where is this landing in terms of impact and the strength of impact? So those are a few different questions we ask. And if the answer is yes, then we go to the next branch point, which is non-negotiable. And that branch point is this sustainable and is this scalable? Are we creating 1,050 point solutions? That's going to be hard to maintain, monitor, and it's going to be more expensive to maintain the solution. Or is this a solution that we can scale across the enterprise to build benefit at a large scale for our patients, for our staff, for our organization overall? So I would say that's kind of like a systematic process we follow. And I do want to get back to something you mentioned earlier, Sarah, which is about, does this reduce the cost of healthcare, right? Like, let's bring that elephant in the room. And absolutely, we try to define value in multiple ways. The first is the human experience, whether it's for our patients or our staff. But then we also want to be mindful about what really is the return on investment of the resources that are being put into this? And is this something that has longevity? So, like I said, the sustainability and scalability are non-negotiables, But some of these added sort of wraparound calculations can often sort of help discern between hype versus true transformation. Because the hype can be a very shiny object, great to use in the moment, but literally doesn't pass the litmus test on any of those key questions that are very, very essential. And, finally, I would say when we do commit, one of the benefits of healthcare I see that personally is very exciting to me is our fiercely scientific mindset. We want to study everything, and we do that. We want to build a pilot, and we want to see are we delivering on the intended outcomes or not. And one of the things that is key in discerning hype versus transformation is that skepticism. When you don't see the results, you've got to ditch it. And you can. You get a good sense that I'm really going towards hype here. And
That sounds like something I need to apply to my dating life, Anjali.
the decision tree
Yeah,
algorithm.
when you don't see the results, you've got to ditch it.
You gotta ditch it. And I will bring it back to the comment that we kicked off the episode with. This isn't about design studios creating this. All of this is being done by the end users. What we are bringing is the tools. What we are bringing is the change management tools. Like, here are the questions you're going to ask. Here are the prioritization criteria. This is how we're going to map value. And this is how together we will discern if the solutions we are vetting are hype or truly transformative. And I think the end user, the frontline staff, are so good at telling you what's hype versus what's really solving their problem. And I think that is the final test for us. It's so really bringing the frontline people in the loop.
Wow, that was perfect. I can't thank you enough for this conversation, Anjali. I thank you for being on our show. We had a blast and really look forward to continuing the conversation with you, in other venues in the future. So thank you for your leadership and for coming to our show.
Well, thank you both so much. I can't believe that we're at the top of the hour. This time really flew by. And I'm very excited with every single episode. And you two are just onto something. You're making this so relatable. It's just absolutely love this podcast. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Me too.
And we're out.
You're out.
We told you it was going to
We're
get
so awkward.
Okay, breathe.
Are you an undata geek feeling lost in a sea of tech jargon during leadership meetings? Sick of resorting to banal ChatGPT recipe finder use cases when somebody asks you how you're using AI these days? Fear not. Introducing the Demystifier, your ultimate translator for tech talk. Imagine this: you're in a meeting with C-suite suits you are dying to impress, with more engineers than a 1920s Chicago rail yard, and a geek has the audacity to say, "Yeah, that'd be feasible with a neural network." Your brain freezes, your heart rate speeds up, your palms start sweating. You feel like cotton balls and peanut butter are simultaneously overcrowding your mouth. But fear not. With the Demystifier, you'll unravel these complexities effortlessly. The Demystifier fits discreetly in your pocket and connects via Bluetooth to a nearly invisible earbud. Simply press a button and instantly understand what in the Himalayas these nerds with their calculators are talking about. Neural networks are a type of machine learning model inspired by the human brain's structure and functioning. Consists of interconnected nodes or neurons arranged in layers. Each neuron processes input data and applies weights, passing the result to the next layer. Through repeated exposure to data, also called training, neural networks adjust these weights to learn patterns and make predictions or classifications. Use cases in healthcare include medical image classification, predictive analytics, and personalized treatment recommendations. Phew, crisis averted. Thanks, Demystifier. Job security intact. But wait! Just when you think you're in line for a promotion, your boss has the audacity to ask you to describe how the organization can leverage NLP to improve patient outcomes and double down on ROI. Don't panic. It's not the middle school dance. Demystifier has your back. NLP stands for natural language processing. It refers to a branch of artificial intelligence focused on enabling computers to understand, interpret, and generate human language in a way that is both meaningful and useful. Use cases in healthcare include clinical decision support, voice recognition and dictation, as well as EHR analysis for extracting previously undetected data signals. Leverage that, boss! Thanks, Demystifier! Stop feeling like an outsider in your own meetings. The Demystifier gives you the power to turn tech talk into average Joe talk. No more nodding and smiling nervously while secretly Googling under the table. Sound and feel like the boss you've always imagined yourself to be. The Demystifier, because deep down, you're really smart, and gosh darn it, people like you. Visit knowitall.geekify.me or call 1-010-101-0101 to order now. Use the promo code CONFIDENTMILLENNIAL at checkout to receive a free copy of Tech Talk for Dummies and an I'm Special participation ribbon along with your order. Demystifier is owned and operated by Gen Alpha Incorporated. Gen Alpha is not responsible for any hurt feelings, nor do they offer tutorials on how to print a PDF or sign up for a TikTok account. Decode your boardroom and restore your professional credibility with Demystifier.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're like me, you were totally blown away by that conversation with Dr. Anjali Bagra. That was fabulous. I was just so enthralled by the concepts that she brought up, the way that she brought different pieces of information together to weave this story of human-centered design around intelligent automation was just really incredible to me. But it made me hungry. It made me hungry.
How hungry?
Hungry enough for a few nuggets.
All right.
To talk about. So I had a couple of nuggets just that I would love to share with you and with our listeners.
Serve them up hot.
The first one that I wanted to talk about with a side of honey mustard is just this concept of streamlining diagnostics. First off, beautiful set of words. Streamlining diagnostics to me is like cellar door, like the most beautiful phrase to hear.
Cellar door?
Yeah, if you don't know that concept, cellar door was once written to or described as the most beautiful phrase in the English language. But
so it's like the opposite of moist.
Exactly. It's like most pleasing to hear. And like you just turned off so many listeners by saying that word, by the way. But anyways, this concept of streamlining diagnostics was just really hit home for me. Like it really brought reality to having to scale the analysis that physicians have to do at the bedside. When she was talking about, like, when I'm an internal med doc and I've got to diagnose, I got to be able to diagnose across a host of different body systems, a host of different disease sets, and how they all interact, and so on and so forth. That whole process can be streamlined by appropriately providing automation. I thought that was just a brilliant concept. I like that. So I'm going to be talking about streamlining diagnostics for a while now. But the nugget that I really chewed on for a while was this concept that technology doesn't have context. And that was such a click in my mind about the whole concept of human-centered design. Mm-hmm. So understanding when is it appropriate to mitigate technology away from this experience or out of the experience from the patient or from the provider, right? It doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, which side of that equation it's on, mm-hmm. and where technology is necessary to enhance it. That requires a human to be part of that design. Because the human is what provides the context to the technology. And I thought that just was like a light bulb in my brain. And then, I mean, she called our podcast a learning platform.
I know, like, that's so giddy.
that was amazing. So that was my plate of nuggets. Mm-hmm. What were yours? What did you walk away with?
I had two rather large chicken nuggets that I came away with. One was this concept that she... that we've all kind of been talking about for a very long time, but she really branded it for me. You know, she called it the automation paradox, where we have this fear of humans being replaced by AI or automation. And then you contrast that with the imperative in our industry to automate, you know, because our workforce is shrinking, right? And the population is aging, and there's this huge surge in demand for good accessible, affordable healthcare. And so, you know, this quote that I'm going to share from the interview reminds me of your favorite hashtag, machines make healthcare more human. She said, tech has very strong potential to bring back the humanity in the care we provide. And I love that she talked about not just humanity for provider to patient, but humanity for our providers, right? Who are looking at literally 200 pages of records for one patient. And that is the ground reality that she said. So, but you know, this automation paradox, the imperative to automate, she mentioned, we have to do this in a human-centered way, as you alluded to, Elliot. Nothing about us without us, right? We've got to co-design with our end users, and that's not just clinicians, that's also patients and caregivers. And then she touched on the importance of process improvement and defining value in a variety of ways, not just in ROI, but value is kind of in the eye of the beholder. And then finally, I just love that she said we have to do this with an eye towards scalability and sustainability, which to me means we have to plan for the long term. How are we going to monitor this from a quality assurance perspective? How are we going to maintain these learning healthcare systems? So that was my first huge nugget, which to be honest, probably got dipped in some barbecue sauce because that's just what I'm feeling like tonight.
Yeah, very saucy.
Saucy. Okay. My second nugget was about how true digital transformation requires system redesign. And she's the first guest on our show that has really articulated this so clearly to our listeners. I mean, no better analogy for AI than this. Can't bring a Ferrari to a place with no roads. You're better off with a bicycle. I mean, amen, sister.
Like chef's kiss.
Right. It's like a Salt Bay moment. And she's talking about how system redesign, we're talking about technical systems, physical systems, you know, buildings, facilities, and people, right? How we interact and work with one another. So we have to re-architect how healthcare is delivered and how it's experienced by all stakeholders. And that is a really bold vision of the future. And it's a lot to bite off and chew. And quite frankly, it's scary. But somebody has to get out there and lead it. And there's no better person than Anjali Bagra. I am super stoked that she is carrying the torch into this sort of unknown, right? I feel very confident following her. And that's leadership right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That was a heap full of nuggets.
I know.
There,
I'm kind of full.
Sarah.
I'm starting to get sleepy.
Yes, but very tasty nonetheless. Well, since you're getting sleepy, it's probably about time to say so long. Thank you to all of our listeners for staying with us and enjoying that conversation with Anjali Bagra, and also listening to Sarah get trounced in tech trivia earlier in the episode. We'll be back next month. We are very excited to bring our next guest on. Anish Chopra.
Wait, did you say Anish Chopra?
I did. I said Anish
Chopra. The giant of healthcare technology. The giant?
Yes, that's right.
Slam dunk better than Barack.
So he says.
Yeah. You're right. We can't wait to welcome Anish Chopra, the first United States Chief Technology Officer.
Yeah, really looking forward to that conversation next month. So please be sure to follow us on LinkedIn and leave us a review and 5-star rating wherever you get your pod. And if you liked us, tell a friend. If you didn't like us, tell an enemy. But for goodness sake, please tell someone. And so, Sarah, why don't you send us off with a health tech haiku?
Here we go. In keeping with the theme of today's episode, here's our health tech haiku. To bot or not bot? That is the burning question. Health's future unfolds.
I love it.
See you next time, Elliot.
See you next time.
Tech Into the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techintothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech Into the Limit.